Blog Talk Radio.
Ghetto children singing. See, they eager to learn how to become the next world leaders. Brave hearts. Revolutionary warfare is warfare. Loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off it. Revolutionary warfare is warfare. Loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off it. Book one, strategy, tactics, techniques. Look dumb, but massively notice the weakness in all of them. Gotta use it only if necessary. Homie, investors is very real if enemies carrying heavy steel. Beware the thugs who ain't scared of blood or jail time. When Aryan nations ain't having integration, we so blind to beauty of life. But when my mom said again, you could be Christ, I wasn't old enough to hold my D&P right. Jesus, what is he like? I picture him standing with diamonds on him, little different from the way my mommy saw him. Practice your aiming, physical training in difficult terrain, and test your endurance, try to keep your stamina banging, splitting duchess up, strap up. The armies of school, teaching smart ways to go. I'm thinking Gandhi was a fool, the chronic's a fool. Got me thinking out loud. Sleep on my drunkenness, I blow your brains out. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here.
My revolution is as real as Bobby Seals. I build with dudes and Chris, work a quarter mil and Dick Hill. For fish scale. For 7 long years in prison of the system. I'm like a modern day Hitler, black gorilla, crib and blood and one only. Just know my face, I be the case for the wish at the police. Look at the name Lake. Go simultaneously with street revolution. 21 guns salute the new. Here we go.
Revolutionary warfare is warfare. Loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is warfare. Loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Woman, how to hold a family down in case something happens to his father. Protect the children, grab a barber. The woman plays a prime part of our life force. So what we fight for, my mother, to you beautiful wife in war.
And listen, war, don't let you fight all and trust none. Demand and respect and be ready to die for what you believe. You can ride all the time, not just when you beat.
Justice and freedom, wisdom and understanding. We the lost children of Israel in this Western world region.
Strong rule the weak, but the wise rule strong. It's more to a war than just getting it on. Seal your form, cover your tracks, stay prepared. I don't care, no one's spared.
Revolutionary warfare is warfare. Loving war for the cause, I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is warfare. Loving war for the cause, I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is warfare. Loving war for the cause, I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is warfare. Loving war for the cause, I gotta take you off here.
I'm a soldier for life. The battle I'm fighting has no ending. To struggle is to go the distance. To win is not to care how far one must go.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How do we get access to this, Jackson?
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer, right?
Yes.
And now, Mr. Jackson.
Mitch Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
Waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Do you understand that there cannot be a peaceful revolution?
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over!
Mr. Jackson,
sorry about your brother.
They will live to regret it. I'll see you today.
Barracks.
Starring Gary Dorden from TV CSI.
This is the military, David.
I am Revolutionary Ingredients. Welcome to another edition of Jordan English Radio. I'm your host, Blue Mind and Secure, where our goals are fivefold. Our first goal is to eradicate functional literacy among new African prisoners. Our second goal is to eradicate cultural ignorance among new African prisoners. Our third goal is to transform the criminal mentality to the new African mentality. The fourth goal is to assist in the rebuilding and stabilization of new African communities. And our fifth goal is to prepare a new African prisoner for release, reducing new African recidivism. Before I bring in a guest tonight, I'll let go of a couple of events that happened in history during this week. On January 17, 1759, Paul Cuffee was a ship captain and entrepreneur born near Dartmouth, Massachusetts. He led 38 blacks from the U.S. to Sierra Leone, first group of ex-slaves to return to Africa through their own efforts. Also, on January 17, 1874, American terrorists seized Texas government in it. Radical Reconstruction in Texas. Also, on 17, Lewis H. Lattimore passed the process to manufacture carbon filament in 1884. In 1917, U.S. seceded Denmark as a sovereign authority in the Virgin Islands. Also, Muhammad Ali, dominated legendary heavyweight boxing champion, born in 1942. Also, on the 17th, 1970, John M. Burgess installed as Bishop of the Protestant Episcopal Diocese of Massachusetts. And we got a couple more events, too, as well, all up in there. Okay. Also, on the 17th, in 1970, Dr. Benjamin E. Mays, President Emeritus, Morehouse College, named President of Atlanta Board of Education. Okay, we got a few more here. Okay. In 1987, marchers celebrating Martin Luther King's birthday attacked in Forsyth County, Georgia. Okay, hold up. I have like two more dates. Also on the 17th, in 1996, Barbara C. Jordan, distinguished professor at the University of Texas and former Democratic congresswoman from Texas, died in Austin, Texas at the age of 59. One of the most admired women of the 20th century, she played a major role in the Watergate hearings and was the first black keynoter of the Democratic Convention. We got one more. Got one more for this date. Let me see. Also, in 2000, more than 46,000 marched demonstrating in front of the South Carolina Capitol in Columbia, South Carolina, to protest the flying of the Confederate battle flag on top of the building. The demonstration was sponsored by PUSH and NAACP, which was sponsored by a national terrorist boycott of the state to protest the official display of the Confederate flag. On January 8th, Dr. Daniel Hale Williams, heart surgery pioneer, was born 1858. Also in the 1949, Congressman William L. Dawson elected chairman of the House Expeditions Committee. He was the first black to head the Standing Committee of Congress. Also in the 1962, the 28th, Southern University closed because of demonstration protection exposed to the city and activists. Also in the 1966, Robert C. Weaver was sworn in as a Secretary of Housing and Urban Development and became the first black cabinet member. Okay, we got one more. We got one more date. It's happening. Okay. This happened in 1988. Sports commentator Jimmy the Greek Snyder was fired by CBS Sports for making remarks called racist. Snyder told a Washington TV reporter that if more blacks move into coaching, there's not going to be anything left for white people. Okay. That's typical of them. Okay, in January 19th, Supreme Court refused to hear the case of the Wilmington 10, a group of political prisoners unjustly sentenced to over 200 years in jail, 1976.
1986, on a weekly radio show, President Reagan denied that he was anti-black and said the Negroes had done better than ever before under his administration. The Democrats denied this, and their response said the number of black families living in poverty has increased by 32% in 1980 to 42% in 1986.
Okay, got one more. Okay. 1993. Reginald F. Lewis, chairman and CEO of the TLC Beatrice International Holding Corporation, the first billion-dollar business controlled by blacks, died in New York City at the age of 50. On today's day, in 1788, pioneer African Baptist Church organizer Savannah, Georgia. Also on today, in 1886, the Florida Constitutional Convention consists of 18 black, 27 white men in Tallahassee. Also on today, in 1870, Moran R. Revels, elected to the U.S. Senate by the Mississippi Legislature, he was elected to fill the uninspired term of Jefferson Davis, which ended on March 3, 1871. Also on today, Emile Cabral, freedom fighter, revolutionary, guerrilla combatant, and Guillermo Bassa in Africa, session 1973. Also on today, 1980, two person killed in a night of racial violence in Aberdeen, Oklahoma. Also today, 1986. Millions of Americans celebrate the first Martin Luther King Jr. national holiday. Also, in 1989, Anna Perez named President Secretary to Barbara Bush. Okay, we got like one more. Okay. In 2001, the Senate confirmed Colin Powell, making him the first black Secretary of State. Also confirmed Raj Pai, the Secretary of Education. President Bush named Condoleezza Rice National Security Advisor. January 21st, 1830, in Portsmouth, Ohio, blacks were forcibly deported by the order of city officials. Also on January 21st, Nate Love, Deadwood Dick, popular Western cowboy, born 1858. Also on January 21st, 1971, 12 black congressmen boycotted Richard Nixon's State of the Union message because of his consistent refusal respond to the petition of black Americans. Also on January 21st, 1992, the National Urban League reported that African Americans were in a deep economic depression. On January 22nd, Benjamin Banneker helped with the layout of Washington, D.C. in 1793. Also on January 22nd, U.S. Supreme Court refused to allow Congress to criminalize acts of terrorist organization KKK and U.S. versus Harris in 1883. Also on January 22nd, 1942, Porgy and Bess revival opened at the Majestic Theater on Broadway with Todd Duncan and Ann Brown in leading roles. Brown left the cast in June 1942 and succeeded later by Etta Moda. Also on January 22nd, 1981, Samuel Pierce named Secretary of Housing and Urban Development by Ronald Reagan. Also on January 22nd, 1989, Jerry Rice named Most Valuable Player after the San Francisco 49 defeated the Cincinnati Bengals in Super Bowl 23. January 23rd, 1943, Duke Ellington, black, brown, and beige, won the first successful extended jazz composition premiere at Carnegie Hall. Ellington said the 57-minute long work was a tone parallel to the history of the American Negro. Okay, 1962. On January 23rd, demonstration against discrimination in off-campus housing stage by students of the University of Chicago. January 23rd, court charged that the university appealed segregated apartment houses. Also on the 23rd, 1976, Paul Robeson, singer, actor, activist, died in Philadelphia at the age of 77. Also on the 23rd, through the 30th, 1977, the television production Alice Haley Roots established records. Some 130 million viewers watched the episode during an 8-night presentation. Class. Yeah, one more date. I think I've got two more. Okay. Also on the 23rd,
U.S. Supreme Court banned a Richmond, Virginia program that set aside 30% of city public works funds for minority-owned construction companies. The 6-3 ruling written by Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, said the program constitutes reverse discrimination. In dissent, Justice Thurgood Group Marshall criticized the ruling, saying that it constituted a full-scale retreat from the court's longstanding solicitude to race conscious remedial efforts directed toward deliverance of the century-old promise of equality and economic opportunity. Also on January 23rd, in 1993, Thomas A. Dorsey, father of gospel music, died in Chicago at age 93. You know, there's a lot of more events that happened in history during the week, but there's a couple of them. There's a few on that happened that I want to go across. First, I'd like to thank all our listeners that have been supporting us in 2014. I want to salute all the brothers and sisters, comrades, and freedom fighters that have been constantly and currently educating themselves individually and constantly educating people in the community and building solidarity. I'd like to send a shout out to all the political prisoners and the prisoner of war that continue to inspire people behind the wall by the written of signs, paraphernalia and books, and et cetera. And I'd also like to thank all the people that are constantly fighting this good fight. It don't matter if you're New African Independent Movement, Black Liberation Movement, Pan-African National Movement, Puerto Rican Independent Movement, so forth, so on. Continue to fight until we attain liberation and independence. And I'd like to bring onto the show tonight Brother Eric Thompson, a.k.a. Hood Credit Eric. How you doing, good brother?
Peace and progress. This is your guy, Hood Credit Eric. Thank you, Brother Bomani, for bringing
Peace,
me
God.
Down, man. What's the word? How you feeling?
I'm feeling good. How about yourself, Eric, brother?
Oh, man, I'm in great space, man. I definitely love that rundown that you gave of the different events that took place this week. A couple of them definitely struck home for me, you know?
Yes,
I thought it was interesting.
Liberate,
man. Roots, that's a long conversation we can have about Alex Haley and how that all panned out. And how amazing is it that Ronald Reagan would say the same thing in 86 that Trump tried to run in 2016 to 2020? The same, I done did so much for you black people. Like, what more can we do for you? Like, you're never satisfied.
Exactly.
Man,
exactly.
They run the same recycled game. Game don't change, just the players, Bomani, for real, man. And lastly,
no doubt
about Reginald F. Lewis. Reginald F. Lewis, man, he wrote a book called "Watching White Guys Have All the Fun," and that's something I hope we get into today. Not particularly that book, but the concept of the cultural revolutionary versus the cultural revolutionary aligned with the political revolutionary, and how we need to find that synergy in order to make to the changes that need to be made. But Hood Credit Eric, planting seeds, growing trees. Hey man, that's what I do. You know what I mean? Take kids that have gone through trauma and try to help restore their lives and restore families so that we could see a brighter day. Because you know what I'm saying? It's all about building forward.
True indeed, brother. Tell the listener a little bit about yourself before we get into this dialogue. Tell them who you are, where you're from, things you support, things of that nature. Okay.
Indeed. I'm actually from Brooklyn, New York, and I currently reside upstate New York. But I've been all throughout the states, been to several countries. At the end of the day, I wear many hats, but my major focus is I'm an educator and a motivational speaker. And I became a motivational speaker by being an educator. It's my students that actually told me I should pursue that particular field about 6 years ago. And it was about 2 years ago that I finally took them up on it. But get deeper into what I do in terms of my dealing with students. I started off as a direct care worker as well as a residential counselor. And I've also worked for the Department of Education as a paraprofessional. And I've been in the classroom with students. So I've been where they live, and I've also worked with them inside the classrooms. And in some institutions, they both were in the same setting where it was a residential facility and then the kids would go to school. And I'd work with them in both capacities. And 99% of the kids I'm dealing with are either court adjudicated or kids who suffer trauma, whether it be, having an abusive parent, having a neglectful parent, maybe not having any parents at all. So with that being said, that is where my focus is. My focus is all about financial literacy and emotional intelligence. and delivering that to our young, as well as our older brothers and sisters, but most definitely to the young. Because the older ones, you know, I got a bone to pick with most of them. So it's just not as easy for me to give them the same kind of leeway, the same kind of sidewalk that I give our young brothers and sisters. So with that being said, that's my focus. That's where I'm at. Like I said, I've come up as a direct care worker. I was in the hip-hop game for a while, and I was able to really see it go from Public Enemy to NWA. I was right there between 91 and 93 when it went from Poor Righteous Teachers to Mobb Deep. I literally saw the car go off the cliff, hit the below, and then blow up and explode. I was sitting there just watching, and that's exactly what happened with hip-hop. With that being said, my focus now, I use my social media platform as well as a couple of other endeavors that I'm looking forward into getting into to bring forth the message of, like I said, emotional intelligence and financial literacy. Once we can get those two things together, those two things will solve. See, those two things they counteract the cognitive dissonance on two levels, on a financial level and on a personal individual level, on a spiritual level, you might as well say. On a mental, physical, and a spiritual level, we're dealing with those two capacities, and so, especially in the capitalist society. Speaking of George Jackson, it forced me to go revisit Marxism and Leninism, which, I mean, Leninism is a very small aspect of what Marxism was in terms of the way I've been studying it. And, man, it's an amazing thing. If you ever get a chance, don't get so caught up in the word communism, because communism, as people know it, as a communist state, is different than what George Jackson was talking about as a communist society. Difference between a communist state and a communist society. So, yeah, man, I appreciate being here. Let the people know that's what I do, man. I plant seeds and I grow trees, man.
Okay. My first question is, what do you mean by emotional intelligence? Break that down so we can get an understanding of exactly what you're talking about.
Well, in my line of work, you know, we deal with social-emotional learning. And social-emotional learning is different than, you know, just the three R's, you know, reading, writing, and arithmetic. Now, I can use social-emotional learning to get you to the end result of understanding reading and writing and arithmetic. But most systems of education are only focused on that aspect of the reading, writing, and the arithmetic, and not the social-emotional learning. So emotional intelligence, simplest definition, is to be in control of your emotions to the degree that they progress and don't regress your activities of daily living. The goal of nature is to move forward. The goal of progress is to move forward. So when things aren't regressing your progress and they aren't dramatically damaging your activities of daily life, see, everybody's not going to be a superstar. Everybody's a superstar in their own right. Everybody's not going to be, you know, a superstar of the basketball team. Everybody's not going to be a political genius. Everybody's not going to be a BMX bike racer. Everybody's going to find their own niche. And so when I say that we have to work towards the highest us that we can be and not allow certain mind states that can – to let certain entities into our mind state that can then damage us from living out our activities of daily living that can get us to where we want to go, that's what emotional intelligence is all about. The same way you would intelligently be able to deduce if you had a round peg and you saw a round hole, okay, well, that goes inside of there. The same way emotionally, is this emotion fitting the situation? This person stepped on my sneaker. Do I need to shoot him in the head? Do I need to do that? Is that totally necessary? This girl, you know what I'm saying, says she don't want to get with me. Do I need to call her all out her name and be ready to smack her across? Is this the right emotional response too? And in a lot of cases, we know it's not. And that's where the cognitive dissonance kicks in. A lot of us, because of the societies that we may be in, because of the way we've been trained, because of the crowd that we're around that may cheer us on or gear us on or jeer us on to make a move that's outside of our character, we end up making some dumb moves. And that's why emotional intelligence is so important, because one dumb move, especially when you come from a community, a place, and a group of people that don't get a lot of second chances. Really don't. A lot of people don't even want to give you the first chance. So waiting for you to screw up. Already got 9 and 1 dial, waiting to dial the next one. And so Yeah, emotional intelligence is being able to handle these situations that life is going to present you and have a certain code and a certain kind of foundation for your activities of daily living that will provide you progress.
True indeed, true indeed. You know, I see you keep mentioning cognitive dissonance, right? You know, for the people that are listening, you know, that were actually a term that was coined by the late Dr. Frantz Fanon. And late Dr. Frantz Fanon was a main theoretician that a lot of people that was into the Black Liberation Movement referred to in regard to resolving certain things, especially regard to his handbook, you know, which is The Wretched of the Earth. So people such as Conrad George Jackson, Black Panther Party, Racial Action Movement, Student Rodney Sneak, you know what I'm saying, other movements, you know what I'm saying, they resorted to the study and the aspects of educating themselves and analyzing and critiquing their particular work from a psychological and where from the scientific level in regards to what this brother was talking about. You know,
yes.
So the brothers keep mentioning it, which is a good thing due to the fact that, you know what I'm saying, one of the main things about the cognitive is that a person have a core belief that they hold on to, even though they know their core belief, it doesn't make sense, but they hold on to it because they're attached to it. You know, even they basically deny the truth. It's not the truth, right? There's plenty of person that's constantly denying the truth. You know, it's really like a person, man, walking through a stove. They know the stove is hot when it's on, but they want to put their hand on the stove anyway and feel the heat. No, they ain't denying.
Yeah.
Even though the stove will burn them, they ain't denying that it's not hot. Or it's raining, but they stand outside with the rain falling, they deny it's raining, but he's out there. You know, that rain ain't hit me, but the rain hit you all in the face, you know. That a card in this business.
Or how about this? The stove is hot, and it's going to hurt, but I deserve to get burnt. Or how about it's raining outside, but I can get an umbrella, but, you know, I deserve to get wet. See, what I found when we and I'm so glad you introduced it the way you introduced it, and Brother Ferone is an amazing sociologist and social scientist and has opened my eyes to many things. Now, when I say cognitive dissonance, I mean it almost on the simplest level, like we were just going into. Once you are doing something that you know you ain't got no business doing, you know what I'm saying? It's as simple as that. Doing something you know you don't have any business doing. And here's the thing. Our minds are so powerful. Our minds are always searching for order. In the deepest chaos, our minds are searching for order. If you put three letters in front of somebody without a verb and you flash it by them, the three consonants without a verb, they will make a word. They will believe. If you put CTS, they will believe they saw cats or cots because their mind won't allow them. The mind needs order, and CTS is not a word. It's no order there. And so we almost in a fight against ourselves when we know the truth and don't act upon the truth. We're going to fight against ourselves. And like my father always said, my father was a comedic priest, he said, the worst thing about fighting yourself is it don't matter who win or who lose. You know, you fighting yourself. If you win, you don't win and lose. You won't win and lose. You know what I mean? The key is not to fight yourself. The key is, you know, Samat Tawi, you know, and ancient comedic understanding. It's the union of the lower self and the higher self. The lower self and the higher self are constantly at war. That's cognitive dissonance. Once the lower self and the higher self make a union and the higher self leads the lower self, now we got some. Now we got emotional intelligence.
Yes, sir. It's interesting that you play this upon it because, you know, in the comedic science, which is really what you were talking about earlier in regard to Marxism and communism, you know what I'm saying? When you look at dialectic materialism and the history of materialism, those particular philosophies, you stem back to the metaneta, an ancient Kemet. And also, Kemet is responsible for what we want to term as being the first solidified aspect of representation of pan-Africanism, internationalism, right? And, you know, and another thing about that lower self, higher self, that basically is the point that we're dealing with ourselves here, that we find ourselves in order to become something better than we are. That basically is what we want to say, G-O-D, the God of the devil within us. Because we find the lower self, which is simplified as set, and you find the higher self simplified as a root, which is the hero, a heart, so to speak. You know, those are some things that we find within ourselves every day to be the greater person. Every day in life, if we call ourselves revolutionary, we call ourselves social science, we call ourselves education, whatever we call ourselves or what we refer to ourselves as. But every day we trying to perfect our particular craft from the congregation we were the day before. And also we find the struggle that, in regards to dealing with society. It shows a particular illusion, a particular form of manipulation, and also shows all these particular distractions that are geared toward us in regards to media. That's why I like what some of the things you're doing, because you're doing the same thing we're doing, using the media to control the narrative, present ideas and concepts to people so they can have very other option than what they see, which is a whole bunch of chaos. Or if you want to say the problem, say the trick knowledge or the trick gnosis, you know, or the Maya, where you want to refer to it there, right? We're seeing all that around us, right? So education is for liberation. That's why we have this platform, because we understand and know that the oppressor controls all the media and propaganda. So anytime the opportunity we get to do so, we got to be there propagandists and propagate our narrative, so people can have make the conscious decision if they want to partake in the propaganda narrative we present or not. It's a decision there, but law will present information. We don't fulfill our duties. Carl Jones said that's the only way you can save yourself is through information. That only educate yourself. It's like George Jackson understood that he had to educate himself so he can be a better person for himself and a better support for the people. That's why he sacrificed himself for the people. Now he was dedicated. And the brother still pushing that, we still pushing that line regarding Georgia University through the educated me by using that night, we're pushing that line. In particular. From the prison system to the streets, you know, we're pushing that line. Educate to liberate, like Bob Jaleel Moody King said. You know,
indeed.
It's just interesting, man.
Information truly changes the situation, and that's what I do at Real Hood Credit. You know, the whole point of Real Hood Credit is to let people know that because you're from a group or area that may be considered to be marginalized, you and your own self aren't marginalized. You know what I'm saying? It's a misnomer. That's why I was talking about Roots. See, what Roots did, unfortunately, was put in the minds of many that the history of us begins in 1619. And that's a tragic thing, because not only does that deny, one, their understanding, they have a worldview understanding, deny your own self the ability to have a worldview understanding, what it also does is it denies you the ability to have any kind of historical understanding. You understand that Homo sapiens has been here over 100,000 years. 100,000 years. And you starting in 1619? What was that? 400 years ago? 400 to 100,000? I imagine somebody with $400 trying to talk fly to somebody that got $100,000. Well, you got 100,000 acres, square, whatever, and I got 400. It's just no comparison. And so the damage that's done by the concept of 1619 being the beginning of what we know, and now don't give me now what's correct about it is it begins the beginning of what we know to be black and white. It begins the beginning of that, and which is sad as well, because you know we left 400 years determine 100,000. The same way the Germans or let's say the Nazis kidnapped and hijacked the swastika, which was an ancient Buddhist symbol. For 2,500 years, it was an ancient Buddhist symbol. The Nazis hijacked it for about 30 years, and now that's all people know it as. See, so controlling the narrative is very important. The power behind the camera is way more powerful than the power in front of the camera. If you got the power behind the camera, you control who's in front of the camera. You control what they're saying. You control how. And when you begin to understand how marketing works, you begin to understand pathos and ethos, and you understand how to make mental connections that people don't even subliminally, but people don't even know that it's even happening. All of these things are taking place in media. You know what I'm saying? Media is a beautiful word. I mean, you know, media is the medium. What is the medium? We go back to, you know what I'm saying, the occult. The medium is what channels the live and the dead channel. You know what I'm saying? And so it's a powerful tool. And unfortunately, we've enjoyed it from sitting back watching it or being in front of that camera. the real power is being behind the camera. The real money is being behind the camera. You know, if that's what it's all about. I mean, if you would think nobody needs no money in the hood when you see half these rap videos where everybody be flashing money and throwing it around. But yeah, the real money is behind the camera. The real money is behind the scenes. The hidden hand making those, you know what I'm saying, making those moves and those, the invisible hand going back, you know what I'm saying, Marxism. And so it's real important, you know what I mean, that people spend their time and energy checking out information like yours, checking out information like mine, because the food that you eat is either going to make you strong or it's going to hurt your stomach. And the food you eat might just kill you. So be careful the stuff you're watching, man. You know what I'm saying? Stick to Bow Money and Hood Credit Every.
True indeed. You know, one of the more interesting acronyms out there is the acronym of media, the most effective devil in America. You know, when you look at that aspect of things, and you look at the way our occupational condition, like one of the things right now that people are always look toward, you know, and people go to social media before they actually go to books, before they actually go to elders, before they actually go to study groups or whatever. They go to social media first. They go to social media first, or they go to the internet, you know. And you look at some of the key words, you know what I'm saying, social media. And you look at the other terms, social engineering. So that means that, you know what I'm saying, psychologically and socially, that the people are programmed, conditioned to think, act a certain way. That's why they have these challenges, icebox challenge, or I'm going to challenge you to do this. You know, they have all the different challenges to do certain things, and they create certain images and thoughts and ideas in people's mind as form of diversion, so they want to actually see what's going on. They're being pulled up on the wool up on their eye, so to speak. They want to see what's going on because they're too busy with these diversions and with these challenges and other things they got going on, right? And people thinking that, you know, that if it ain't on social media, it ain't on the internet, it ain't real. But you got elders walking around you, walking and living his story, and they don't live any particular history, live any particular legacies. You got people that got the information in their head, they haven't wrote no books. And you got people that are writing books that are actually not involved with certain things, and they consider to be academic. You know, so it's a whole different aspect when it comes to propagating. You know, kind of word, you know, look at the word propaganda has had a lot of negative connotation to it due to the fact that, you know what I'm saying, the state wants us to think that propaganda is some bullshit or evil because they use it in an evil way. You know, but we know propagation is a tool that we use as revolutionary means and guerrilla warfare and other aspects, you know what I'm saying, to get educated the people. So when things go down, the people understand that they're going to deal with as a recruiting method, you know, as a recruitment and educational tool. You know, so it's interesting, man. You know, when you look at things, right?
Yeah, you're 100% right. Well, it's the same thing with media. I mean, that was an interesting acronym you said, but what it does is it limits that power to America, which we know is definitely not that. You know, the devil is everywhere doing all types of the same activity in all types of countries. And what it also does, it allows them, once again, to control it, because once you put the devil name on something, you begin to distance yourself from it unless you're ready to either dance with the devil or engage in that activity. You start distancing yourself from it, and what people tend to do, it's the same thing like with this vaccine. See, once you put the devil on it, you know what I'm saying, and we looking at it as, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? When he went to pilgrimage, Malcolm, if we're looking at it in that kind of devil, and especially once you start looking at it as just a monolithic group, we're not even being surgical. We're not even figuring out. I mean, like at least the way in any kind of thing you're dealing with a group, you're looking for the weak link in the group. If anything, you know what I'm saying? You don't just totally ostracize the entire group and think you're going to go to war with them. You're trying to find, you're trying to pick them apart. You're trying, if you want to even approach it from that strategic or position. And so, man, I'm like, man, if you want to go to war, you're not ready for war if that's how you're looking at it. If you think it's going to be good enough just to call somebody the devil and then move on back into life and not have to deal with the reality that you just did. Media, perfect example, you just call, you said, not you, but, you know, people want to put that out there as the devil is the devil, man, and then what? So what? Brothers like me and you wouldn't even engage ourselves if that's what we thought all it was. Now, have they, like you said a second ago, have they utilized it just like with propaganda? Have they usurped it? Have they perverted it just like they did with the swastika? Yes. But that's what we got to be wise and intelligent. This is a chess game. You know what I mean? You got to be able to take a loss. That's another problem. But because of cognitive dissonance and because of the and what that does is it almost like a Pandora's box. It opens up a whole lot of other things. You start looking at an inability that certain fathers and mothers have to raise their children because of that same thing. I know I'm supposed to be here with my kid, but I feel like being at the game. I know I'm supposed to be here with my kid, but I want to go to the club. I know I'm supposed to be here with my kid, but I got to hit the block, whatever the case may be. And once a kid starts suffering from neglect and abandonment in any kind of way, what they end up being later on in life is people who can't let nothing go. They can't let it go. So you wonder why a dude get into a beef, he get into a fight, he, you know, he got a little busted lip. Why he can't just go home, nurse that, and call it one? Why he got to go home, get a pistol, and come back and shoot the whole corner? Because he can't get over it. And it's chemical. And it goes back to his childhood, being neglected, not being given the proper support systems early on.
True,
so
indeed.
So he's running from the devil. Either we're going to take the devil head on, or we're just going to hide in the corner. I mean, but this whole concept of pointing the finger, like, I was never no more ridiculous to me than when people was get called nigga and then they say crack a back. As if that's just some kind of equilateral statement. The cracker, they call cracker because that's the person that cracked the whip. Now, how the hell is that equal to the N-word? And these dudes that just think the N-word is, like, you know, something that we can intellectualized too. They ridiculous as well. That's just ridiculous. Ain't no way you can intellectualize that word. That word was birthed in tyranny. It was birthed in self-destruction. It was birthed in blood. You can't clean off the blood off that and then give it back to me and say this is a good thing. It ain't gonna happen. That ain't happening. They need to leave that alone. All these old ass rappers, all these old ass political think they this, all these halfway woke people, whatever they want to call themselves. If they think the N-word is going to bring them any type of liberation, they got the wrong. They thinking the wrong thing. They need to rethink that. You think, yes. They ain't bringing nobody nowhere. I ain't seen the N-word do nothing for nobody. But the enemies of our progression, the enemies of our rise, the enemies of our, you know what I'm saying, amelioration and self-development. That's the only person that's approved by that word.
Yes, sir.
So I ain't mean to go off the topic, man, but yeah, man, my thing is, you know, man, we got to plant these seeds and grow these trees, man. It's 2021, you know what I mean? If I approach, I'm moving towards 40, 48. If I live at 48 the way I was living at 28, then I don't waste the 20 years. And I hope all these other old brothers, let's see them back seeing they 50 years old, saying the N-word left and right, 50 years old acting like they 15, man. Like, man, y'all boys, y'all crazy, man.
Yeah. No, in regards to what you just said, the plant seed, growing tree, what do you actually mean by that? What's your understanding behind that? Why do you say that? What does that mean?
Well, I mean, hey, man, it's metaphorical in a sense, but it's also allegorical. You know what I mean? Trees are very important. Trees are what outlives us. See, if I give a youth a choice, I give a youth a chance. If I give a kid a helping hand instead of a harsh word, I began the process of digging that hole that I'm about to implant into this soil. And this soil may be unfertile. You know what I mean? I may have to work, so I may have to add certain things to it. I may have to wait till it's a certain time of the day or a certain time of the month or a certain time of the year. But at my core, my goal is to plant this forest full of trees that when I'm gone, they live on and can provide the air, the oxygen, the wood, the fruit for those that will come behind me. So it's more than just developing people. When I'm with my students, it's more than me just developing a person in my mind. I'm literally developing a tree that can grow to a height that will amaze anybody that ever saw it. And would never believe it when they first saw it as a seed.
Okay. You call yourself hood credit Eric. What exactly does that mean? You know what I'm saying? Explain it to us in regard to why you choose that particular title or name, so to speak.
Well, like, to be honest with you, ironically, when I first started as a motivational speaker, my cousin had a clothing company called Hood Credit, and he was asking me to, like, kind of, you know, you know, he wanted to see if I could get involved with what he was doing. And I felt like, you know, him being an independent, you know what I mean, black clothing designer, I wanted to add a positive, you know what I mean? My whole concept was we're no evil. You know what I mean? I wanted to add a positive concept to the company so that you weren't just wearing clothes, but you was literally a fashion statement. You know what I mean? And the statement was that the same way when you work a job, you get work credit, the same way when you go to college, you get college credit. When you come from the hood, a lot of times you tend to get no credit. It's almost seen as like the moniker in the not even that's not even the word I'm looking for, the kind of negative connotations that can come with it. A lot of times rob you of some of the intrinsic qualities that you learn in that warrior society. If you notice, most of the millionaires today, the mega millionaires, are to a greater or lesser extent self-made. They're not generational wealth. Jeff Bezos, I'm saying Mark Cuban, this is not generational wealth. And I'm not saying that they, you know, came from, you know, whatever tough situations, and I'm not saying they didn't. But I do know when you look at people like 50 Cent, Jay-Z, you can see that how they, what they had to learn to survive in the Southside Jamaican Queens, what Jay had to learn to survive in Marcy Projects, once you mix that with new knowledge and you mix that with new experiences, you have a hell of a force on your hands because you're dealing with somebody that knows adversity. You're dealing with somebody that knows how to take risks. And the definition of an entrepreneur is somebody that's willing to put up their money to take more risks than the average person. The average person does not want to be an entrepreneur. They'd rather get a job and let their energy create a wage and not have to take the loss, not have to take the mental strain of taking the loss. And so when I say hood credit, I say that when you come from a place that's down, being demonized, being vilified, being disrespected, being marginalized, that don't mean that you have to be any of those things. And you can actually, as above, so below, even though you're in that spot, you can extract the best from it. The same way snake, the antidote for poison comes from the poison itself. So the antidote comes from the venom. So you can, if you're really studying it and you're really on top of the thing, you can extract some powerful things from having a drug-addicted mother. You can extract some powerful things from having a brother that got killed and shot in the streets. You can extract some powerful things from being in a school system that's not giving you what you know what you need. And so you become erudite and start teaching yourself. And then before you know it, when you're in places and spaces where you have to learn something fast, you can. And a lot of people may not because they used to have somebody hold their hand. They used to be in the class, there's only 15 of them. You used to be in the class, there's 40 of y'all. And you ain't got no teacher, even though the teacher's right there.
Oh, indeed. You know, I understand that you transform lives, right? And you're an educator. What type of education do you present to the youth that can be transformative to their life or can make turn their life something different than what it did or make your life better? What type of information ever is do you offer?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. I mean, it's all about transformative information. It's all about information that changes the situation. The best way I can put it is I'm an educator, not a teacher. If you notice, I never said I was a teacher. And the reason being is because teaching, just that's the thing about any field you're about to get into. You got to study. You got to know it's for you. You got to understand the ins and outs as best you can and what really, you know, what's beneath it, what's on the side of it, what's around it. You know, you really got to look at the whole square. And like I said, I got into education because I was really irritated with a lot of teachers. I was let down by a lot of teachers, myself personally and by working with them. Because what a teacher's job is basically to do is either one or two things, either to train or to instruct, right? And if I train you, I'm basically telling you to do it a certain kind of way. If you step out of that kind of way, you're doing it wrong. Now, it may not be a damaging kind of wrong because you may think of a good idea. You may step outside the box and do something good, but you're doing something wrong because you're stepping outside the box. But the end goal of training is for you to do it the way I showed it to you. Now, instruction, a little bit different, but kind of the same. I'm building literally instruct. I'm building the structure. The structure is within you that I'm building. I'm building you up to be this particular thing. So like in the military, that's why they call them drill instructors, because that's the process and the purpose. But now with an educator, it's a different thing. Education goes back to the Latin word educare, which if you look at it, you know, in Anglo-Saxon terms, which is like in America, let's say, it'll be educare, E-D-U-C-A-R-E. So educare means literally to draw out, to draw forth, to draw out of you. So I'm not in the classroom to tell you this or to tell you that or to preach to you or this is you must learn or this is how it goes. That's not my job at all. That's not what I do. That's what teachers do. I'm an educator. I'm there to ask you questions. I'm there to present you allegories, scenarios, analogies, just images. Sometimes I might sit down with a group of kids and I'll show them a seatbelt, a wad of money, and a guardrail. And they'll be like, okay, I'll say, well, what do you think all these things have in common? What, let's talk about these. Well, that's a guardrail. What kind of guardrail do you think? So we'll go through the three objects. But my whole goal of the class is to talk about safety, because that's one of the tenets, you know what I'm saying, at the institution I was working at. So my goal was to talk about safety. So I'll show you these three images, get your mind kind of jarred. That's called inducing curiosity, by the way, to all of the educators and the parents. Some that instead of having a kid feel pressured to learn something, you want them to come to you begging you for the answer and interested, you know what I'm saying? And so inducing curiosity is a great way to do that. That's a great pedagogical tool. So what I do is I'll have those three, and then the students may, like I said, we'll have a conversation about the three, and then we'll get to the point of safety. Then you'll see the light bulb go off. Oh, okay, I see where all the three connect now. And then we'll go into whatever the aspect is. But in that process, it was all them. All I did was present three pictures and say, what do they have in common? And then I step back and allow their brains. See, my thing is I don't want to teach you what to think. I want to teach you how to think. So no matter what situation or predicament, you know what I'm saying, comes your way, you'll be able to have the emotional intelligence to figure it out. You know what I'm saying? Because you haven't limited yourself. You haven't pigeon-toed yourself. You haven't imprisoned yourself in a mentality or a certain kind of reality changes when your thoughts change. Your thoughts dictate your reality. So you're not in prison. You're free. And that's what I want. That's what I want to give my brothers and sisters. I want to give them freedom. You know what I'm saying? And you can buy your freedom. And education is one way you can. Some people bought their way out. Some people fought their way out. Some people thought their way out. So I'm giving them those three methods. So what my students give me inside the classroom, as well as those that give it me online. And I mean, online is more than just, I mean, you see me post stuff, but the real action happens when people start asking me questions, start asking me, can you contact a homeboy of mine that's about to join a gang? And I know he don't want to, and he just needs somebody to talk him out of it. And I make these phone calls. The real action is when I got parents that be like, I ain't seen my son in 2 days, and he follow your page. I just found out where he is. As soon as he come home, I'm going to have him call you. Can you talk to him?
Yes, sir. Application.
You know what I'm saying? That's where the rubber meets the road. That's where it's beyond a post. You know what I'm saying? And this happens daily. You know what I'm saying? Daily, I'm making calls to places. I'm checking up on certain people. If I know somebody trying to get into the studio, hey, if they really energy is right, I'll put some money behind it and send it down to them, because I'm here for them. And like I said, I'm planting seeds. You know what I'm saying? I'm not stupid. You know what I mean? Ain't nobody gonna play me. And so I'm not really worried about that as much as I want certain kids who've never had nobody take a chance on them to know somebody will take a chance on you, and not by just putting a crack in your hand or putting a bundle of heroin in your hand or putting a pistol in your hand. Somebody take a chance on you in a positive way.
Yes, sir. That's all what it's about, you know. People taking a chance, an opportunity, because that's what life is about, chance, choice, and decisions. You know, another interesting thing you said earlier, right? You gave an origin of where the word come from, which we term etymology. You know what I'm saying? Etymology is a very interesting science that relates to linguistics and other sciences that are dealing with words and verbiage and ideas and concepts. It basically means to the better understanding of things, right? And also, right. not just, it also means, etikara also means to bring out. So you bringing out something in an individual that they themselves don't see it, but you see their potential. So you bringing it out to them
exactly.
So they can be able to move forward in a positive perspective way, right? I got one
exactly.
more question. We'll open the line up for the good. Callers, right? Can you tell me how important is it to politically educate the youth? How important is it to politically educate the youth? How important is that?
It's probably the most important thing we can do. I mean, the word politics is often maligned when reality, almost everything that happens has a political, anytime you're dealing with people, you're going to be dealing with a political situation. Literally, you know, and it's all about how you don't allow certain words to scare you. Like when I was young, you know what I mean? My grandmother, you know what I'm saying, who was deep in the etymology and teleology, she presented me with a word called anti-disestablishmentarianism. I think it's one of the most important things we could do with kids is give them big words. Give them words that they barely can pronounce, barely can understand, and just intimidate the hell out of them. And then when they're able to master that word, oh, my God, the feeling. But just, I mean, hey, if it don't challenge you, it don't change you. You know what I'm saying? And so I think it's important. I also have a phrase that I use with all my kids. They know me for always saying this. You're never too old to learn, and you're never too young to teach. You see, a lot of kids and young people react the way they do because they've been robbed of the ability to have a voice. That's why I say I'm not there in the classroom to tell you this, and you're going to cram for this exam. Nah, not at all. I'm here to help you gain the knowledge of this particular subject by exploring the tools and the skills that you already have. You already got this. I'm just helping you bring it to the forefront. You're not coming in this room at a deficit. I don't know this. I need to learn this. Nah, you already know all you need to know. This right here is just going to be another, it's going to give you another new aspect of understanding. This subject is not a subject you don't know. It's not that you don't know geometry. You don't seen shapes before. It's just that the understanding of it and the aspect of it is going to be more something you can use. It's going to be more functional and pragmatic to you by the time we're done because you already got it inside you to do this. So I don't have kids that come feeling empty or feeling without, or like they're about to go fix a car without a toolbox. I got kids that come to fix 10 cars and they got every tool they know they're going to need from the door. I let them know you got every tool you're going to need because I'm not here to impart this on you and impart that on you and tell you you're doing this right or you're doing this wrong. It's not about right or wrong, really, at the end of the day. It's about what are we learning? What are we learning here? You know what I'm saying? If you got every answer right and you got every answer right, most times kids that got every right answer is one of two things. They really, really into that subject and like learning it or they cheating. You know what I'm saying? And so I'm not looking for that kind of information from kids I work with or from nobody in my life. I expect people to screw up. I'm going to screw up. You know, don't hold nobody to no higher standard than you hold yourself to. I'm going to hold a kid to a standard that they never going to have not have homework, especially when I got kids who, when they go home, they're lucky if they even get something to eat. When they go home, I mean, I got kids that have been body slammed through glass tables, stabbed in the eyes with screwdrivers. Both of their parents are sexual offenders. You know what I mean? I mean, who am I? You know what I mean? I got kids that got in high school. I had a kid, for example. I asked you all the time. I said, man, have you seen the kid sleeping on the desk in the classroom and you was trying to give a lesson, what you do? I wake him up. You know what I mean? You come to school to learn. You don't come to school to sleep. I was like, yeah, you're right. But what if you found out that kid was getting molested? And this is the only place he felt safe. This is the only place he could actually close his eyes and sleep. Because anywhere in his home environment, if he closed his eyes, he might wake up in a situation he didn't want to be in. What would you say if I told you that? You know? And so,
yep.
We have to understand that we don't understand. You got to come into this situation, you know what I mean, with a fair amount of respect for our own ignorance. And it's so important when dealing with children to have that. Give them that sidewalk because you'll find things later on that, you know, like Steve Jobs said, the dots never make sense looking forward, only looking backward. But my thing is when you treat others the way you want to be treated, you won't make a lot of those errors that some people do when they just want to push their weight around or get compliance or, you know what I'm saying, want people to bow down to their authority or whatever the case may be, man. It's the extenuating circumstances and the mitigating factors that create certain scenarios that blow your mind. So, man, yeah, that's a piece of it, man.
True indeed. But I'm going to say a piece of that, man. I want to thank you for coming onto our platform to share your knowledge and understanding. I want to thank you for the work that you did in the past, the work you do in the present, the work you do in the future, man. I'm going to salute you. And
indeed.
At this time, I'm about to open the line up for a few callers. They can make ask a couple of questions, make a couple of statements, join the dialogue. So at this time, I'm about to open up. Okay. The first line I'm going to open up is 562-212. You have a question, comment, statements, lead us with your time. 562-212. Your line is open.
Hi, Sukari.
Greetings,
brothers. Uh-huh. Excuse me, just trying to adjust a few things here. Oh boy, it's not working. Anyway, I like the discussion when you began off with cognizant dissonance, especially the explanation or the definition as related to the study that Dr. Franz Fanon established, and of course it's definitely an object of oppression. It's the explanation of how the oppressed are being treated. Just listening to everything, I swear, is very compelling, especially when you spoke about the last part where the young man comes into the classroom and he falls asleep and you don't know where he's been the night before, or what he's been through times before. When you spoke to me, all I could think of was, you take time. But, of course, that's not how people are taught in professions. They're taught their job and the rigor or the what they have set in line, the guidelines. So how do you deal with folks that you work with when you need to improvise and care for the students where they are?
That's a great question. What's your name, sister?
Sukari.
Sukari, I do appreciate that question. I find myself at, I don't want to say at war, that's the wrong way to put it. I find myself at odds often. Yeah, at odds often with a lot of my coworkers. And, you know, there's two things I'll say about that. One, slackers and workers don't get along, really. You know,
tell
you
right.
Slackers and workers really don't get along. And it's like you just said, it's work. It requires patience. It requires respect. You know what I mean? Respect is getting into etymology. And respect, you know, is re, meaning again, and spec, meaning to see. So if I just look at you one time and just, you know, dismiss you, that's disrespectful. But if I look at you once, and then I say, okay, I'll pass by you, you're sleeping. And then I look back at you again, and I see how hard you're sleeping. I see how deep you're sleeping. I say, you know what? I mean, let me just nudge him on the arm. And then I see that, let me not even do that. I mean, I'm really, at this point, putting together a process of approach while at the same time balancing the classroom, trying to keep them in good spirits, because that's another thing, too. It's not just about, here goes information. A kid's supposed to be able to come into a classroom and feel like they came to a haven. It's supposed to be a place that brings out the best in them. You know what I mean? It's supposed to be like a video game room or, you know, or whatever kind of place, or COVID. So wherever they want to be, it's supposed to feel that kind of way. And I believe we as educators, you know what I'm saying, have that ability to do that. But I do find myself at all a lot of staff. Oh, man, I'm going to tell you. And I have no problem with pulling them to the side and talking to them. I never would embarrass them in front of a group, because that's not my job. That's not my goal either. My goal is what we call restorative justice. And restorative justice is also, unfortunately, something that's not practiced enough in our institutions. And it's restorative justice basically means when we leave this scenario, no matter who was at guilt or who was the victim, we both should leave here feeling better and having learned something. So when I have a kid that gets bullied, it's just not about the bully having a bunch of problems, and that's another thing. A lot of these kids come from homes where they're being abused. And so people attack the bully, not recognizing this kid is probably dealing with 10 times the abuse that he's demonstrating inside his classroom. But then on the flip side, the kid that being abused and allowing himself to be treated this way, also got to address him and help him find some inner strength. And so, yeah, it's a balancing act.
Yeah, you have to take into consideration everybody where they woke up.
Yes, right. No, we call that
where they live.
Yes, yes. We call that you got to meet students where they're at. And
yes,
you don't know what they went through that morning, what they went through that night, what they've gone through in life. Like I said, I got kids that both of their parents are sexual offenders. Yes. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I laugh and stop crying at how sad that is to have that as your legacy. You know what I'm saying? No mother, to have a mother and a father, but to have them as that. You know, I have kids that got passed around by their family members. And so it's like, now this is the same kid that you have to have. You got to have so much compassion and so much understanding when you're dealing with somebody that's been that traumatized.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's not new. It's not a new condition.
No, it's not. But here's what's new. The studies that have been done and the ways that we can approach it. And that's not even new, because if you go back to spiritual systems, this has been done. Restorative justice actually goes back to the native communities, the native aboriginal, the native communities, you know what I'm saying, before Africa was even called Africa by the Romans. I mean, this goes back to nativity, the restorative justice. That's why you didn't have a bunch of prison camps in native society. There wasn't a bunch of prison camps and bars, and there wasn't all of that because you didn't need it, because restorative justice was in place. So, no, you're right. None of our problems are new, you know, but hopefully that, you know, the way that the only thing new about them is us. You,
yeah.
Me, Bomani, you know, we people here to try to help solve some of these problems.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it.
Right,
I learned a lot listening to you. Hmm?
Oh, thank you. You're the best. If you ever on Instagram, check me out at Real Hood Credit. Every day, you know, we all about planting seeds and growing trees.
All right, then.
Thank you.
Be with you. Mm-hmm.
No doubt. Same to you.
Okay, I appreciate it, Mama Shakar. I'm over to Nick, over on another line. See what's happening right quick. No doubt. Okay, 614-285. Your line is open. Yeah, question, comment, statement for the guest. Please do so at this time. 614-285, your line is open.
This is Elder Mama Condi.
Okay, go ahead, Elder Mama Condi.
Greetings. How you doing, sister?
That is such a long story. But that aside, I appreciate being able to treat my ears to the African-centered thought that you share, the African cultural process that you embrace in these schools, public schools, and on the college level. The curriculums are all Eurocentric. So it's focused on the teacher and what the teacher puts inside the student. And that's a lie. We come with everything we need.
Right.
And to have a true teacher who comprehends that everything we need inside of us, their job is to pull it out. I deliver babies. I don't put babies into the mamas. I help the babies
right.
Come out of the mamas.
Right on.
You know? So I just, it's very enjoyable as an elder to sit here and just listen. It's a treat for my ears. And I thank you. How old are you?
I'm 47.
Bless your heart.
Yeah,
got any children?
I do. I have three. I have a 22-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 1-year-old.
Bless your heart. stepping out there and starting all over again.
Yeah, I tell you, kid, got to give me up. Give me up. Right on. Okay, you talking about you talking like Mama Cardi. I appreciate you.
Oh, bless your heart. Bless your heart. And revolutionary regards to your mate. I'm proud of y'all. And I love the fact that you're sharing information that we should be able to hear every day, and we don't. It's like you're feeding the nourishment and the nurturing and the embrace. And are your students in your faith when you do your sessions? Or
well,
are they online or?
Yeah, but the pandemic has presented a whole different scenario. So, yeah, it varies with the pandemic. But like I said, I've been doing this for, you know, over probably about 18 years. So my experiences go, you know, across the gamut, you know. But, yeah it's difficult with the virtual learning. Yeah.
Bomani, thank you for sharing this, brother, with us. I do have one more question. I am blind.
Sure. Okay.
How do I get to benefit? And do you have, like, YouTube videos? I'm able, if somebody sends me your link, for example, I can sit and listen to you like I do Dr. Clark or Dr. Ben or Queen Mother Moore or... You know, I'm able to listen to those. Exactly. I can call and listen and participate. How do I get to do that with you since I'm blind and I have limited access?
You don't give her money?
No, she's talking to you, sis. I mean, talking to you, bro.
I'm talking to you, bro.
I mean, I'm not sure. You want me? I can get you. If I had your email, I could definitely send you some stuff. Other than that, I'm like on. I haven't really began my YouTube journey yet, which I intend to do. 2021, actually. But I'm on Instagram. You could definitely. I'm not sure how you do it.
As a blind person, I don't really have access to Instagram. What I'm learning is that the technology has not caught up with the need.
No,
and so
you're right.
There's actually no technology for blind people unless you're Jose Feliciano, Ray Charles, or Stevie Wonder, because they can afford to be blind. But what I've learned is it's very difficult for those of us who can't afford to be blind. It's enormously, it's just cruel and wicked.
It
everything
is.
Costs
you'd
more
almost
for
need
us.
like a braille something that you could feel that could help you navigate.
Nope. When I was locked up and incarcerated as a political prisoner, my diabetes went out of control. They wouldn't give me anything that I was using to control my diabetes. So by the time I finally got out, it was so out of control. I'm still fighting to control it with herbs and homeopathics, but it is an enormous challenge. And as a result, the neuropathy has destroyed my ability to be able to read Braille.
Oh, wow. Well, I tell you what, you got a dynamite energy. I don't know what I could do to help solve the problem, but you made an indelible impression on me. I tell you that much.
Bless your heart. I'm humbled
Well, Paul, I said, hey, Mama, okay, Paul, I said, bro, you know, this, like the Mama said, she said that you actually can hear some audio that you can listen to. That's a way of communing and gaining information and knowledge, and also a way of corresponding through audio. So if you can do that, you know, that would be a great benefit to the elder mom in regards to her resource, in regards to her development and growth, and also keep her motivated so she can motivate others as well.
Yeah, but Monty, any guidance you can give me in that area, man, I'm 100%, yeah, I'm with it.
Okay, I got you. I got you, man. We're going to make something happen there. So we can get,
okay,
we can get
no problem.
Some information, some stimulation. Yeah, some more stimulation.
Sure, I'm behind that. I'm with that 110%.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much. I love you. You have a great one.
I love you right back.
Welcome, Mama Connie.
Okay.
Okay, open a line. We're open a line for another call right quick, brother.
Okay, no problem.
True indeed. 901-292, a line is open. If you have a question, comment, or statements to the guest, leave it to the time. Your line is open. 901-292, a line is open.
See the land, brother. It's wonderful listening to your
mission
and your purpose. Very good. I'm very, very happy to be listening to the esteemed speaker and seeing his work over the years. I, too, along with Mama Condi, we're in the education field. And, of course, it's always a challenge when you're within the system and the different curriculums that we try to navigate through. That's why we are definitely interested, as far as the Republic of New Africa, creating new African curriculums and strategies. And you've given us a wealth of strategies and behaviors, because one of the things that I do find out is that if the educators are not educated, our children will not be. And when we come from a Eurocentric, when we come from a Eurocentric paradigm, instituting all these little strategies and tactics, and we're not pulling the information out of our children and instilling in them the love of self and the love of culture and the love of purpose, it becomes a great challenge. It has been a great challenge, but then you look at the flip side and you see these beautiful homeschooled and African-centered children who are being downloaded with all this wonderful information, and they have a sense of self, they have a sense of purpose, they know customs, they know how to greet, they know how to do so many things. How are you navigating through that in your mission?
Yeah, I hear you. Thank you very much for the question, sister. To be quite honest with you, I found I have more flexibility in my current position, which is at a private school, versus when I was in the public school system. The public school system is a tough nut to crack. I mean, it's designed in such a way, the rigidity of the system is such that either you got passionate teachers that leave, or you got a bunch of whack teachers that stay. I mean, I hate to say it that way, but it really is such a rigid system and so fearful of change. And I mean, in most cases, all it takes is a principal to have a wave of a pen, and you could begin to put programs within programs. And like a perfect example, I would begin to take time within, you know, a social studies class to go into the history of certain kind of codes of dress. And so, you know, we would go through, you know, certain kind of African garb and go through certain kind of Native American garb. And eventually I'm stemming it so I can help them understand through having a worldview that is bigger than the corner that you're in, or the project that you're living in, or the town that you're from, or the state that you're in, or the country that you're in. Through the conversation, I'm giving them nuggets like only 4% of the world's population lives in America. Letting them be able to see me. So somebody inevitably say, you mean 96% of the people don't live here? Yeah, 96. So they can begin to establish this worldview and see the world in a different kind of way. Within the class, I'm showing them how to tie a tie. And not how to tie a tie so that they can have further indoctrination to white supremacy, but how to tie ties so they can feel empowered in the society that they're in to then make their own choice later on to pick up a different kind of kente fashion or whatever they want to do. So I find that the educators, and that's why you have to be an educator, because if you come as a teacher, you're just there to teach. You got the curriculum in front of you, you know, and I'm teaching it, and y'all learning it, and then I'm going home. And, you know, that's the way you're running it. But when you're educated, you come in there, to, like you said, to draw out of these students all of the things that they need to begin to see about themselves, to create the mirror for them, to see this reflection. I tell my students all the time, the only competition you got is the person you was yesterday. Don't show any competition. Person you was yesterday. And I'm talking to the person today so we can get that person to tomorrow, you know what I'm saying, and give. And that's the key. The key is to find those slivers of opportunity. The key is to clamp down on those teachable moments. Like I may have students that have sagged their jeans, right? And a lot of teachers will be like, pick your pants up. Oh, don't you know that that's prison homosexual? I mean, and I don't get the logic in that. You're trying to tell somebody that they need to be more accepting of other people, then you use homophobia to get them to do what you want them to do. I'm like, no, none of that people work. That's a lot the window. So when I talk to a kid who pants are sagging, my first question is like, well, when did you first start doing it? Like, who did you see doing it? What made you, you know, we talking. I'm getting understanding who they are, where they come from, what's their life experience. Then we talk a little more, and I let them know. I say, man, that's revolutionary fashion. Which means revolutionary fashion. I said, man, they're making laws against that. You got laws against that in certain places. You got dress codes designed just for that. You could be considered public enemy number one in your school just for doing that. I said, man, do you know how powerful it is when you could take the way you dress and turn it into a whole political statement? I said, man, don't you know the time when people wore black armbands at the time, you know what I'm saying, where brothers wore berets and leather jackets, and that was considered, and boom, so now we got a whole other conversation that we're going towards, that we're gearing towards, that's going to give them some kind of insight. And maybe they might not pick their jeans up right then at that moment, but I guarantee you, I've had that conversation with a kid for 2 weeks, and last time I see when he see me, pick it up just a little bit. Just a little bit. And really, that's my thing. My thing is not to change you. My thing is for you to help change yourself. My Absolutely. Thing is not to jump in your head to make you do it. I want you to do. I want you to be able to have that emotional intelligence to know how to think and not what to think, and then to make your next move your best move.
Absolutely. I think that's a very
my answer
very
to that is you find small slivers of time and you take advantage of teachable moments.
Absolutely. And you know, we're down here in the southern region of the country, it has been a battle, because when I first came into the school system, there were a lot of what I called a lot of educators who were wearing attire. You could see in their classrooms a lot of cultural images. So I knew that those kinds of conversations were going on in their classrooms. And we literally had, through the so-called No Child Left Behind, Change the Curriculum, whatever it is that's going on now, people have lost their jobs when administrators come in and they are teaching who we are and what we are.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying? So,
yeah,
as I said, it becomes not only it's a challenge for the community, in other words, because we still feel that a lot of educators, and I'm always going to call them educators, we have a whole new set of teachers that are there for, I want to follow the curriculum, I want my money, and they're not facing the social problems that enter into the classroom. And I can tell you they enter into the classroom from pre-K all the way up, because we have to face the children that are abused, that are neglected, that have been treated awfully, and try to nurture and to transform. And that's a lot of work. Because it is not, mm-hmm. we are not being healed. We're not being healed, brother, from a communal perspective. A lot of times, the women in kindergarten are Caucasoid. The counselors, the speech therapists, they're all somebody else. And I guess
mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying? Because we're trying to create a consciousness and new African consciousness to help our children navigate through. Because, yeah, we reach children and they come back and tell us, oh, you transformed my life, this, that, and the other. But to what end? Are we transforming our children to navigate through, to understand that we don't want to be a part of capitalism, imperialism, and to promote who we are as new Africans, land independence, the red, black, and green, the culture that we're supposed to have as indigenous people? Or are we just, what are we trying to do? So I appreciate what you're doing, because at least you're giving them some tools to analyze and to set them on their path. So I really appreciate that.
Thank you very much. And I'll just lastly say, it's another form of neglect. Once kids get into the classroom and they find that you have a teacher that's there for the dollar and not for the for the dedication. And, you know, the sad part is, if you look at it, our most foundational institutions have been usurped by the dollar. You know what I'm saying? The medical, you know what I'm saying, establishment, education, and
absolutely,
to a greater or lesser extent, you know what I'm saying, we start looking at. See, cause the whole thing about prison, I mean, now we can definitely go back to, you know what I'm saying, fugitive slave patrols and, you know what I'm saying, overseers, you know what I'm saying, in that capacity that, you know, fueled that system. But we also dealing with just a breakdown in trying to keep slavery alive. I mean, you know what I'm saying, the way they got the money trail of how people get screwed and how this thing is screwed up is deep and it's rampant, and we got to do our best to raise our kids the best way we can, those that we are biologically responsible for and otherwise. So I appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
No doubt. Number love.
Thank you, Mama. Thank you, Mama Aya, for coming on, you know, and asking your question. I salute you, sister.
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay.
Yeah, well, brother. We got like 3 more minutes left. You got any kind of final thoughts? You want to lead the audience with anything? Any social media contact? Any website contact? Any of the information you want to share? You want to leave us with?
Yeah, you can definitely check me out. Yeah, no doubt. I appreciate it. First off, let me say, Bomani, my brother, Uhuru, I do appreciate, man, this opportunity to talk to your audience. You know, it's a beautiful, beautiful audience you have, man. The energy has been amazing. And the questions
have
been right on time, and I appreciated the preamble, you know what I mean, giving people the understanding of the depth and the wealth of knowledge that, you know, in history that, you know, is to be ascertained. So with that being said, you can catch me on Facebook at Hood Credit Eric. I'm actually beginning to get my knowledge. You know, I took some business courses, you know, throughout my life, and now I'm kind of getting deeper into credit repair as well as, you know, stocks and bonds, investments. Like I said, financial literacy and emotional intelligence. I didn't get too much into financial literacy this go around. But the next time when we speak, I will. I'll probably have my whole program together by then, and hopefully, you know, you give me a chance to get back to your show and we can talk about it. But, yeah, so.
Okay. We'll definitely get you back on.
Hood Credit will be helping people get their credit together pretty soon. You know, so you can check me out on Facebook at Hood Credit Eric, or you can catch me on Instagram at Hood Credit Eric as well, or at Real Hood Credit. And like I say, a lot of my videos are Trojan horses in the sense that when you see it, you may see a blue bandana and a pistol on the cuff. And you may think it's going to be something ignorant and arrogant, but when you go into it, you'll find out it's probably something about trust, or about apologizing, or about admitting when you're wrong, or about the purpose of coming together as a community. And like I said, a lot of times, unfortunately, you know, those are the images that a lot of our youth gravitate towards. And so, you know, my whole purpose and program is to help our youth be the best that they can be. You know, my program is ABCD, you know, stay on your A game, be the best you can be, see where opportunities exist, and then do your thing. Don't bend, break, or fold. So you can definitely catch me, as I said, on Facebook at Hood Credit Eric. You can catch me on Instagram at Hood Credit Eric and at Real Hood Credit. I'm putting together a website right now, which is going to be Hood Credit Eric. So really, all things Hood Credit Eric. and as well as real hood credit. You know what I mean? And like I said, moving on to the financial aspect, because we got to get ourselves in a position where drug dealing is not the what's inherited as the job. And that's what it's becoming. And especially through hip-hop, going back to media. You know what I'm saying? People wonder why so many people talk about drugs so much in hip-hop. Well, the reality is, to have a successful independent record label, it takes money. Who in the hood got money like that? Drug dealers. So it's like, unfortunately, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. You got a hungry market full of people that want to hear music. You got a hard industry, an expensive industry to enter. You got drug dealers paying for money to get people on. They talking about it. It's a bad cycle. So we got to introduce other ways for our young brothers and sisters to get it, because there's so much money out here. I mean, it's money being printed every day. When people, they run out of money, they just print some more. I believe it's $50 trillion in hard cash floating around and $200 trillion in credit, which in debt, rather. It tells you something in its own self. But it's a lot of money out here. And walking around with your pocket full of cash, yeah, that sounds all good when you don't have anything. But once you really start making some money, you want real estate. Once you really start making some money, you want a portfolio. You want to be able to put people to work and give people jobs and opportunity. You know what I'm saying? And that's really what it's all about. So, like I say, man, you catch me on Instagram, you catch me on Facebook, but just put in Hood Credit Eric, I pop up all over the place. You know what I mean? And, hey, that's how we're going to do it to the day. Bottom to the top, to the casket top. I ain't going to stop.
Yes, sir. Again, brother, I want to thank you for coming to our platform to show you how to understand it. I want to thank you for the work you did in the past, the work you did in the present, the work you did in the future, right? I want to salute you. If anyone have any loved one, associate, comrade, friends, or relatives that are incarcerated, please look into our website, which is georgiauniversity.com. Again, it's www.georgiauniversity.com. Long live the resistance, long live the African independent movement, and free all the political prisoners of war. Struggle off land independent. Peace.
One love.
One love.